ABR. Do we have? We gotta check if we have KBs then.
No, I just did, and that's why I have to reset to record.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Red leather, yellow leather. Red leather, yellow leather. Penis, 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 penis. Sometimes I think white people smell funny.
Mommy! Kinko touched me!
Kinko the friendly clown?
A little too friendly.
Kinko the kid-loving clown.
That was it.
He's a copycat.
Well, he actually was a copycat because he was imitating John Wayne Gacy.
Did you all hear about the fucking porn star in Germany that, like, dismembered a dude, fucked his body parts, and mailed them to politicians? It's fucking crazy shit.
Yeah, she is. She's pretty hot, though.
They still haven't found the dude's arm, one of his arms or his head yet, so...
Up inside the vag.
I think it was a dude. I think it was a dude who killed a dude. I don't remember.
Yeah! Up inside his ass.
Probably.
Yes. Alright, tight Keith, did you remember?
I'm good.
Alright,
here we go. Let me get the intro down. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, a rare alignment of celestial bodies that only happens every century is occurring tonight to bring you this Nerdstravaganza podcast.
Woohoo! Venus and the Sun.
That's right.
And we had Fuck Cloud cover here.
Yeah, I'm not really seeing it today. Maybe because I stared into the sun too much and now I'm blind from it.
Are you referring to our heavenly bodies or the transit of Venus, Grant?
You know what? That's what people actually call me when I walk by. I'm a little bit svelte. I'm a little bit svelte for my own good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you actually be a little bit svelte?
I'm a little bit too svelte then. I'm a lot of svelte, but it's a little bit too svelte.
That boy got a case of the scronerosis.
I'm wearing a back brace to help cure that, if you must know. But before we get too deep into this kind of nonsense, how about we start out with what we've been doing this week? What have you been up to, Keith?
Well, I've been up to lots of stuff. Thank you very much. I'll be here all week.
That's descriptive. Wow.
No, I've actually been knee-deep in copper and plastic. I've been rewiring my entire audio-video system. Several months ago, I purchased a bunch of devices, and I rapidly hooked it all up for connection glory and left cables and wires all over the place. So I disassembled all of that, bought myself a nice spool of cable, and I've been banana plugging everything.
Banana plugging.
You can get instructions for how to wire up your home at www.bananabuttplugs.com.
Yeah, so I mean it's I mean I'm kind of, if there's anything that I do thoroughly, it's hooking shit up. It might be backwards if you ask Rick, but it's hooked up. And so yeah, it's been, you know, running cables properly, using the proper length of cables, that kind of stuff. And I've been, you know, I really enjoy that sort of stuff.
So I've been working on that.
Yes.
I have a question to pose to you about this. How long does it take until all of that just goes out the window?
Oh no, this is going to be permanent installation type stuff.
Pardon me.
The only problem I have is getting cable to my surrounds, which is still running under carpet.
Oof. Because you see, every time I spend any amount of time to wire shit up, I give it about a month until it's just everything wherever I can fit it, like just cables.
Well, that's what it was. I mean, I had, you know, first all the units were skewed all over the house. So, you know, I've got HDMI cables that are 8 feet long that I've shortened down to 1 foot now. You know, put everything in its proper location. And so I'm getting kind of happy with it. You know, it's all in one nice spot. Everything's clean. You don't really see any cables except for the ones going to my surround speakers. And I do have a Cat 5 running from one corner of the house to the TV because I'm too cheap to buy the wireless adapter for my television.
They have a wireless adapter for your television?
Yeah, so I can get Wi-Fi.
Yeah, buy an Xbox.
Future.
sell you my Xbox.
And lastly, I finally ordered 3D glasses for my TV, so I'll get to watch some of my 3D Blu-rays that I have finally in three dimensions. They were on sale for $88, down from like $180, which is
you got ripped off, man. I got some for free with my Transformers coloring book.
Were they red and blue?
Yes.
I don't think those work with my television.
Well, how about you, Mr. Tom? What have you been up to?
I have been up to reading. I've been doing more e-reading of the A Song of Ice and Fire series. I hate to repeat myself every week with this, but it is really good, and you people need to read it. I need you on board with this, 100%.
We get it. You're Mr. Smarty Pants. You know how to read. Stop rubbing it.
Look at me. I know words and books.
I'm smart so good.
Actually, I can get internet smart about the words as I read them because the Kindle app that I'm using to read the book lets me just double click on any word I don't understand, and it looks it up for me so I can get real smart.
That's cool.
Yeah, it is kind of cool, actually. So now you don't have to be like, oh, I'll figure out what that word means years from now when I have nothing better to do. You can just be like, let me find out what it means now.
Very cool.
And then forget it.
Is there a button to pronounce the words?
There should be. That would be awesome. And it would be cool if you like put it like in pretentious British mode. Aluminium.
But that would be really good for some of the fantasy books I read because I don't know how to pronounce some of the words they make up.
Like Twain? Yeah. You can decide whether you want to use like the American Oxford Dictionary or like the British one. I obviously set it to the British one so I can be pretentious. Whilst I'm reading... Right. Apart from that, I finally started playing. My video game, progress continued. I finished the Resistance 2 game for the PS3, and then took a little break from PS3, popped back over to Xbox, and started playing a little game called The Dragon's Dogma.
Woof.
I've been woofing that game down. As well, I've done a little bit more Diablo 3, but haven't been devoting as much time to it as I'd like. And I really would like to play a bit more. And only recently started speaking with Rick. As recently as today, in fact, started speaking with Rick again about getting some electronic marquee devices built. So... those are just discussions. I'm such a do-nothing that who knows where it'll go, but definitely a nice thought.
Is that going to be a new biz for you guys?
Yeah, we plan on getting pretty rich from it. It's like our new thing, being rich. Yeah, so once we're rich, we'll invite you guys to the Nerd Extravaganza Mansion from time to time. You can hang out in the grotto with Jawas and robots and all sorts of other cool critters.
It'd be pretty sweet.
I hope somebody out there in podcast land got my joke. Because nobody else
about the marquee biz. No, well, I picked it up.
Last time we talked about this, that's we did the biz marquee jokes left and right.
Yeah, sorry if the well worn path all over biz marquee and did not really
fucking biz marquee jokes getting as old as hearing about fire and ice over here. Just kidding, man.
Whatever. I guess Sorry, I couldn't provide a better update for you, Grant. Maybe Rick got what you need.
Awesome segue, dude.
I don't hate that one so much, so I guess that was a good one.
That was a good one.
All right, well, you have your marching orders, Rick.
All right, well, I spent last weekend in a little place I like to call Nerdtopia. I went, not only did I go to the Orlando Mini Maker Fair, where I got to play a Tesla coil, which was awesome. Got to play a Tesla coil with a keyboard. Cool. I also got to hang with R2-D2s, which was awesome. And then I went to a badass electronic surplus place called Skycraft in Orlando, Florida, which was like... one of the Jersey Shore guys going to the Playboy Mansion. Dude, this place was badass. They had anything and everything you could imagine, so I will be making a trek back with a big blank check so I can buy all kinds of cool stuff.
Cool.
Then, after that, I popped over to a little place I like to call Disney World for Star Wars weekends. And I spent the day at Hollywood Studios, walking around with the likes of stormtroopers and Darth Vaders and bounty hunters, arm in arm with the dark side and the light side. It was beautiful.
That doesn't sound canonical. Is this extended universe?
It was everything. It's all over the place, man. I saw Jawas, I saw Ewoks, I saw TIE fighter pilots. It was cool. I went to... This year's theme was all about...
The Geonosians.
Yeah. It was all about the re-release of Episode 1 in 3D, so it was kind of themed around a lot of Darth Maul stuff, which I'm not a big fan of, but I did find it funny that they made a gigantic temporary store out of like this really big galactic-sized air-conditioned tent, which was wonderful to be in, by the way. Just filled with all kinds of new merchandise and stuff and props and shit from the movies, and it was actually called Darth's Maul.
Darth Maul? Oh.
No.
It really was.
That's the worst.
I hope you sent Grant a picture of that.
I took a picture. I'll post it. And in there, I got to take a picture with a life-size maquette of one of my favorites from Episode 1. Nubian!
What's a Nubian?
It's a little blue guy that flaps around.
Life-size macaque.
Yeah, it was a giant monkey. Giant blue monkey. So yeah, that was pretty cool. I got to hang around there and, dark side cupcakes that were dark chocolate and peanut butter. Dude, it was Star Wars and robots and Star Wars and Disney World and card games, Magic Sorcerers of the Kingdom. It was a fucking amazing weekend. It was awesome.
Hey, Rick, I have a pun.
Hit me.
Great. All right, outside of the Darth Maul, did they have a nice little forested and floral kind of recreation area called the Ray Park?
From Grant, no less.
I know. That's why I couldn't give it up.
Yeah, I'm trying with that one.
And other than that, not much.
Well, then, I'm really
interested in this electronic joint you found in Orlando. That sounds pretty cool.
Well, you can go with me. We go back because it's sick. That place was definitely cool.
All right, well, I guess it's time for me to get into what I've been up to. I got a video capture card for my new PC I built.
Nice.
Cool.
So I can record video coming out of my phone is the only thing I've tested it with.
Not as cool.
I'm pretty pleased with that.
Just give me your time.
I've been recording test video of my game that I'm working on.
Oh, cool again. Cool again.
So pretty stoked with that. You know what? The thing is, I'm down to those last few points that always stick me with the game. Like, I'm pretty much game logic complete, right? I'm down to now I have, like, maybe three more animations I need to develop, and I have maybe, like, just stuff like the game music that I need to implement. I have, like, a couple of sound effects that need to be tweaked a bit. Like, just the little things that are just outside of my specialty enough where I'm having a hard time being pleased with the way it's coming out.
So when are our listeners going to be able to test a demo for you?
You know what? I'm going to have this thing done by the end of the month.
There you go, Elizabeth.
I'm going to have it done by the end of the month. I want this out of my hair. Then I want to move on to a project in a development platform called Unity. I'm just going to carry this momentum, you know?
I heard of this Unity.
It's a pretty big deal. A lot of indie developers use it. Speaking of indie developers, the other big thing I've been up to is the Humble Indie Bundle was released this week.
Oh.
I don't know, have any of you all checked that out?
I checked it out. I didn't purchase because I already had two of the games that are in the bundle, Limbo and Psychonauts, which one of them was a gift for Christmas from you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And the other ones that didn't really excite me, so I didn't pick it up.
Okay, well, for the listeners that don't know about the Humble Indie Bundle, basically it's like five or six games, and you can name your own price for it, and then determine if the money that you give, like what portion of it goes to charities, what portion of it goes to the developers, what portion of it goes to the people hosting the bundle. So it's, you know, you feel like you're giving to a good cause, and this bundle, a lot of really good games in it. I played a lot of the one on there called Amnesia, The Dark Descent, which was the only one I really haven't spent a lot of time with before. Mm-hmm. But holy crap, that's the most terrifying game I've ever played.
It looked good. That one actually piqued my interest.
You know what? That one is, if you like, even if you don't like scary stuff, like, imagine Myst if it made you shit your pants. Is that making any sense? Like,
yeah, Myst is pretty graphically amazing and really pretty and beautiful, so this is the antithesis to it.
It's like my girlfriend was in the room with me while I was playing this, and I was constantly saying, like, oh shit, oh shit, oh, like, what's happening, what's happening, what's happening? Nope. And she's like, what's going on? Did you see a monster? And the only thing I could say is, no, there's no monster. I'm like, no, no, no. There being no monster makes it worse by like 50 times.
So it's kind of like how Myst had that perfect sense of making you feel completely abandoned and disconnected from everything, even though you were sitting in your computer desk playing it.
Yeah, this game...
It had that same type of immersion.
This game captures the whole atmosphere and feeling of, like, nice. Gradually losing your sanity about as well as any video game I've ever played. I think maybe it does it better than Eternal Darkness. Wow. I'll phrase it that way, which was a very good GameCube game. A bit more gamey than Amnesia is. Interestingly enough, though, you said Psychonauts is in this, which is, you know, from a rather large studio. So I'd actually like to roll this into a conversation of what does define an indie game, because, like I said, you have like a 100-person team or something like Double Fine releasing Psychonauts on this, and then you have a couple games that are made by just two or three people in this bundle as well.
Right.
So just, I'd like to go around here and describe what makes an indie game to you. Like, what defines the nature of an indie game?
To us individually?
Yeah, because I think as a whole, the term indie game is almost as meaningless as the term indie music, which is just such a vague, amorphous term that's almost become a genre into itself, you know? Indie gaming is getting that way. So I would like to know, you know, just for you all, because we're going to launch into a discussion about indie gaming, I'd like to know from you all what it means, so we all know where we're coming from when we actually start talking about it.
Tom, why don't you go?
Well, why don't I?
Well, you don't have to. If Keith wants to go, I can edit this chunk, which I'm happy to have to anyway.
So why don't I go? In my mind, I mean, I guess there are tiers of indie game, and for me, having had my brief crack at working on the Xbox 360 platform, the XNA or Homebrew Development Kit or whatever you want to call it. I think it was called XNA at the time. I would say that epitomizes, I mean, unless it's a guy just sitting down with like an open library, I couldn't think of anything more that would epitomize the indie game development efforts. It's just a couple of people are like, hey, let's make a game with no real, you know, support beyond what tools are available out there to them and no real hope of success beyond, you know, what they can
kind of doing it for the love of the development.
Yeah, well, probably with hopes that somebody will, people will embrace their output and you know, maybe even farther off hopes that it'll achieve some level of commercial success. But I just, when I think of an indie game, I think of, you know, people in their basement cracking away with, just on a wing and a prayer, basically, as opposed to a development studio deciding, oh, let's do this, you know, some side projects and release them as indie games. That's not as pure to me. So I hope that sums up my views on it, on the matter.
No, I think that works out pretty well. It's, to me, almost, there's almost a distinction even between two guys. Like when we worked with XNA, there's a difference between a handful of guys with full-time jobs who are just like, hey, y'alls want to make a game in the spare time? And say a team like Team Meat that released Super Meat Boy, that this was literally what they were going to do. They, no other job, like basically having to take out loans or mortgages just to finance what was an extremely risky financial endeavor to release, you know, in this case, Super Meat Boy.
And that's, to me, like, that's what I always thought or considered an indie game to be, was something like that where, you know, you're trying to get your business off the ground and this is your flagship or, you know, this is your freshman project. This is what you're doing to try to make your name in the industry. But I'm seeing now, after, you know, kind of researching for this show, that it is more on the lines of like what Tom was talking about, in the sense of it's a lot more widespread and a bigger picture than I really thought it to be. I'm like balls deep in what the classic gaming we call homebrew community, and that's doing games on the side, your nights and weekends. It's your hobby. You're not doing it for anything more than the challenge, the love of doing it, and, you know, maybe wanting to, you know, have a little internet fame of like, hey, look what this idiot did in his free time. So I was surprised to see how much stuff was out there underneath both definitions, because I never really looked at it outside of what was available in the classic game community until I got my Xbox. And my Xbox is loaded with the indie games on there, and all of those, or at least the grand majority of them, were done by, you know, like this thing like you guys were going to do. Just a couple of guys screwing around, and some of them get picked up by Microsoft and end up turning into real games, and other ones just get sold for a buck a piece, which is awesome.
Yeah, no, I mean, a lot of those games, even the ones in the indie marketplace as opposed to the arcade, they are serious financial endeavors. Like, people make those things hoping, like, I'm going to spend my own money, my own time, take a financial loss for this, for the hope that it will generate revenue for me in the future.
Yes, it runs the gamut from the biggest piece of shit you've ever seen, and you gotta think somebody put it up there for just a joke, to other games that you're like, oh my god, I can't believe that, like, a couple of guys did this, because this is freaking amazing.
So I'm going to outline what's probably the worst feeling in the world. To be the guy who made Wizorb, which is a fantastic, it's a phenomenal game in the indie marketplace.
Yeah.
And like, to like say, hey, I'm going to get Paul Robertson to do all the pixel art in this game. I'm going to make this phenomenal retro style game. And then to look at the sales chart on what is a very poorly marketed platform on the Xbox, on Microsoft's part. Mm-hmm. And to look at the sales list for it and realize that Controller Massage 5 is outselling your product 2-1.
I totally knew where you were going, dude.
If you look at the sales, like the top sales in the indie marketplace, is like How to Talk to a Girl, Virtual Date Simulator, Massage Controller 5, and then like Blocks That Matter, Wizorb, all of these just phenomenal, well thought out, unique video games.
Yeah, it's like the top rated ones are games that like Click and Play would laugh at. Seriously.
You know, I think it's actually kind of probably hard to make something so bad that Click and Play would laugh at it.
Dude, I was making Click and Play games back in the day and they were awesome.
Oh god, no. My brother and I got Click and Play when I was in middle school, and we made so much horrific shit with that. I'm going to go ahead and out myself here a little bit. I think the first game I ever made for that was a game where you played a little animated smiley face of Bill Clinton and a sheet of paper with the word draft on it was going across the screen back and forth and you had to dodge it. That's any indication
that's
of
pretty heady for a young kid.
If that's any indication of when I had this, it was I made Draft Dodger. I think you had to eat dollar bills. You had to dodge the draft and eat dollar bills.
Well, you want to hear my list? I have four winners. The ultimate game I made. All right, the ultimate game that I didn't finish was called Wonder Slug. And it was this crazy-looking slug thing, and it had like a porno theme music to it, like 70s blaxploitation porno soundtrack. Never got that one finished. I had one called Les Bounce of Death. And what it was it was this antique style bed that you moved left and right at the bottom, kind of like a breakout game. And all you did was have to bounce this animated gymnast as she bounced through like this cathedral backdrop thing that she had. And when she died, she splattered and screamed and had like body parts flying around. Then the next one I had was called Shithouse Sniper.
I think you've spoken of this one before. That is definitely a name I've heard before.
And it was spelt like German, like shithouse, you know, H-A-U-S. So,
oh, and it's sophisticated, of,
yes,
course.
Of course. And Shithouse Sniper, you had to run around. There was a game field, and under the game, or in the game field, there were scattered outhouses, and only one of them was unlocked. So you had to run to get to the unlocked outhouse while getting shot at by a guy in a sniper tower that was strategically placed above a septic tank. So what you were doing was the way you beat the game was you would run and get to the open outhouse. When the door closed, you'd hear and then a flushing sound, and then your shitometer, or shitometer, depending on how you want to pronounce it, would fill up in the tank. And if you filled up the tank, then it would blow up the sniper tower. But, you know, you only had a certain amount of deposit each time. So you'd have to continually risk. So when, you know, you'd go in, you'd dump your load. If you didn't blow up the tower, when you'd exit and then a new one would be unlocked. It would pick it randomly. So that was one of my crowning achievements. And then there was one other one, and for some reason I cannot remember it right now, so if I remember, I will reinterject it. Damn it!
All of that in Kiki Play?
Yeah.
Yeah, actually...
Yeah, and it was funny. When I first bought it, I thought it was called Kiki Play. So me and Keith still call it Kiki Play to this day.
Actually, I'm going to go ahead and plug a website that's not affiliated with us, but whatever. GloriousTrainWrecks.com. Did any of y'all check that out?
Yeah, I did.
It's basically a website of shitty click-and-play games that people still update to this day. Like, people are still...
No pun intended.
Yeah, no, people are still putting out games on this stuff, which is pretty impressive. Tom, do you have any experience with, like, very early game development? What was the first game you ever tried to make?
Let's see.
Oh, wait! I remember what my throne is. It was originally called Petting Zoo, but after my nieces all came to visit,
called it Heavy Petting Zoo.
I changed the name of it to I've Got Scabies! And I had all my like little 5 and 6 year old nieces record it in the room for me. And basically what it was is there was a bunch of hay bales laid out like a Pac-Man style game. And you had to walk around and pick up like little pieces of corn or something. And the animals, if they touched you, you would die. And it would, the game would scream, I've got scabies. So yeah.
That sounds awesome.
It was awesome.
I bet your sister or brother or whoever spawned those children loved them being in I've Got Scabies.
Yeah, she loved it. All right, sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Okay, so Tom, any recollections of what your first game you ever developed was?
When I was in middle school, I took this like intro to programming class or some such nonsense, and we started off with like basic like, you know, text input and output, and then creating graphics using ASCII characters, which they called print graphics at the time. So at every step of the class, I would like develop a different like aspect of the game I wanted to do, and I would really rather have just lingered in one section of the class, because then I could have gotten further into it. Like at the first part where we're just doing like text input and output, I did like dialogue. So I was making a game called like Elf's Adventure or some stupid like medieval. Like I was such a dork. that naturally it occurred to me to make something like that, and it was like, you are in a glen and a goblin approaches. You know, what action do you take? You know, of course. And then my teacher's like, oh, this is very good. Oh, wow. Oh, very imaginative. I like what you're doing. Like, she's being all encouraging. Like, all right, moving on. Now we're in low res graphics. Or no, now we're in print graphics. I'm like, very well.
So, thanks so much for that.
Well, it's no problem, because now to go with the text, I was creating the glen, you know, like the scene of the glen that would be created with, like, you know, like trees and like a unicorn creature in the background. And she's like, what is this? Like, what am I even looking at here? And she's like, this isn't the assignment. Like, she would like tell us, like, create a mountain. I'm like, no, this is the scene that you saw in the text portion. So, like, it would show you this too. She's like, okay. She wasn't sure what to make of it. Then, like, the next thing, like, we went to low-res graphics. So I was like, okay, cool, now I'm going to make weapons. So I, like, made, like, a shield with, like, a cross and, like, a sword and, like, different items that you would have. And she's like, I don't understand what this – like, what are you doing? Like, she didn't get – I was like, don't you understand? Like,
she's teaching a computer class and doesn't have any idea where you're going with any of this.
Right. She's like, I mean, you're not getting it. Or she didn't understand that, like, every time you make me switch – platforms, I just develop like the next part of like whatever a part of this game, this amorphous game that I want to make in the new thing. So it's like, this is a sword and shield, like, and the hero will have that. She's like, wait a minute, but I thought that game was like text. I'm like, you keep moving the class, like, what do you want me to do? It was so annoying. And then we got into like low res with animation. So now I was like having, I would like have a dragon, and then like his animation was like, it would go from like the dragon sitting there to fire coming out of his mouth and his mouth opening and like two frames. So I figured out that. I figured out how to make the sword like glow and like different things. And at this point, the teacher just had no idea. Like, okay, it's animating. I guess that's fine. And like other people were doing stuff like making a locomotive with like steam coming out of it or like a horse galloping. And I was like making dumb, like, I thought my things had every bit as much merit, but she just didn't understand. And then we finally got into high res. And she forbade me to do anything related to my stupid game. So I had to, like... So I just did, like, a missile command, like... Because the high-res graphics were, like, you know, like, little, like, pixel-wide things. So I just did a missile command, like, thing where, like, missiles were falling on the earth and blowing up. And she didn't get that either. She didn't understand my vision, the whole class. And it was, like, first just high-res static graphics and high-res, you know, animation. That's where I did the missile command thing. So did I ever develop a game? I basically developed a game... or try to develop a game in an environment where every time I got used to a technology set, it was pulled out from under me. So I developed assets and storyline and dialogue for a really undefined medieval quest game called, like, whatever the hell I called it, Elf Adventure. I don't even remember.
Actually, can I charge you with a task then?
Yes.
I want you to go back, get into the mindset of young high school Tom, and I want you to make Elf Adventure in the Glen. I think you should do it. I think Elf you should make it happen.
For the Android.
Okay. I think Elf Adventure in a Glen.
In a Glen.
Which culminates in, like, you have to get ready before, like, a meteor storm falls from space and destroys the Earth. I think I have the makings of a game here. And it just switches. You start off, it's a text adventure. Then it's, like, some stupid low-res weapon design game.
And as you level up, the game looks better.
Yeah, I like it. And then hell just rains down. The cataclysm occurs, and that's the end of the game. Brilliant.
Final boss is an evil computer programming teacher.
or the animation of one only in high res.
Whose only dialogue is, I don't understand what you're doing here.
Elf uses, you don't understand. It's not very effective.
The unmovable teacher stands before you. What are you trying to do here? And no matter what you answer, she just keeps asking the same question.
My absolute very first game was a text-based adventure on, like, the Commodore PET or some shit. I mean, it was, like, way, way, way long ago. But the reason why I wanted to make it was because all the other games that were out there that were text-based adventures were all, like, Elf in the Glen shit. And I hate medieval crap or realm stuff. So I made – mine was all about, like, space and robots.
That's cool.
It was Jawa on the forest moon of Kaishak.
Pretty much.
Oh, so Keith, do you have any, like, fond early memories of either indie games or indie development on your own part?
I never really had grand designs to create a full-on game. I'm sure most of our audience has never heard of a company called Infocom, but they made the greatest computer games ever written before computer games existed, and they were all text-based. Basically, you would be presented with a sentence, and you had to not select a choice of what you wanted to do, but actually enter in a choice and hope that you would pick the right word or, you know, group of words that are in the game for your next action.
Yeah, you're talking about, like, they made Zork, they made the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah,
games, like
Police Ball, Quest was a text one. Yeah, there was a ton of them.
That was Sierra, I think. But, like Infocom in particular made, like, Zork, Planetfall, Hitchhiker's Guide.
So, you know, I delved into that a little bit because it was really easy. You just throw text up there and you have a couple if statements and go-to statements all written in BASIC. And that was about it. That and my greatest achievement, I guess, back in the day was making a stick man dance and change colors. But he was never in any part of any game or anything like that.
He could work him into ElfQuest.
He couldn't be because before you got done, you probably had to go and work on something else.
Exactly.
He could be part of ElfQuest and he could be part of Elf Adventure in the Glen Meteor Attack.
I'm gonna go ahead and tell you this, Tom. If you and Keith are on the same page here, the original source code to the engine that like Zork and all those games are written in, the Ooh. Fortran source code is available.
Yikes!
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Crazy. I can't believe that. That's actually, that would be interesting just to pore over to like see what went on. How did people think back then?
CHR dollar sign.
Bunch of craziness. No, I think probably like I played a few of those Zork type games as a kid, but I think Shareware was my first real foray into indie gaming back then.
They made
in the
a
day.
Game about Share?
Do you all remember
Share? You chose her outfits. You chose her outfits
before the show. You have to play for sailors on a deck of a ship.
I say you have to play her son playing guitar with his head just hanging in shame as she parades around and like chaps hanging out.
That's not nice. The kid had a big head and mask,
so to speak.
Mask. Didn't you see the movie about her son? That's not cool to make fun of that.
Make yourself
well, Rocky.
I can't, you bimbo, get me to a hospital.
Yo, Adrian, I did it.
Different Rocky. Oh.
Why did she make yourself well? Really? Call 911, I'm dying.
Sorry, we got way off track with that.
Way off track.
That's fine.
And for anybody who needs to know, the name of the movie we're talking about is called Mask with Eric Stoltz and
Jim Carrey.
Not Jim Carrey.
Oh, not cool. A tragic story where, like, she comes in, Rocky, you're dead. Auga! And he's awake.
Seriously, to form Stanley Ipkiss finds a mask.
Ipkiss.
No, Shareware games. They were a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Did you all...
Shareware. I just got the outfits thing. Shareware.
Welcome to the show, Tom.
God damn, I thought we'd just gotten back on track after that one. Nope.
All right, don't try to mask your contempt for this or anything, Grant. Let's just get on with the show.
Yeah, Shareware games were cool, without a doubt. And it was awesome because most of them you could find on like a billboard or whatever and download them for free.
I remember I just bought like a CD of
Bulletin Board.
100.
Say a billboard?
Did I say billboard?
I knew what you meant. I wasn't going to let this get derailed by anything.
Sorry, no, I meant bulletin board. Billboard.
There's like a bucket of floppy disks.
You could download a game or, post up if you wanted a roommate. Whatever. Just driving down the highway, download this game or 2 miles till south of the border.
Tux medicated pads. I should try those.
Billboard. All right, sorry, go ahead.
I don't even know why I bother anymore. No, I was just going to get into it. I remember my first real time I played indie games was on a collection of like 100 shareware games that my parents brought home from, I believe, Walmart. And just like 100 shitty, almost click and play style games where the shareware model, if you're not familiar with it, was you get essentially an extended demo of the game that's like, you know, maybe a like a quarter of the game, and then you have to pay $5-$10, and then you get the full version of the game to continue on. Like Wolfenstein, Doom, a lot of those early games were released under that model, but also a lot of smaller independent games were released using that same kind of model.
There were actually a lot of games, like after I got Click and Play, I'd be like perusing around Kmart in the software section or whatever, and they would have those discs like what you're talking about, 120 shareware games for, you know, like $5.99 or $9.99 or whatever. And so many of those games, you could see right on the screenshots of the back, on the back cover of the CD case, they were the default, like, stock graphics that they used in Click and Play games. And they were 100% just created on Click and Play and then ported it out to this thing. It was crazy.
Oh, those old graphics from Click and Play bring back so much stupid memories, too.
That was the first game, or Click and Play was the first game thing that I ever had a real life experience in, like, graphic manipulation, in the sense of I was taking photographs and you could import photos into Click and Play and then put, you know, basically like all the crap you can, you know, you take for granted now, but back then it was crazy. Like I made a cool fighting game with my face and my friend Mark's face. We were like fighting. I mean, it looked like ass, but just the fact that you could like scan in a picture, cut the face out, put it on like an alpha background and bring it into a game was fucking amazing, dude. Absolutely amazing back then. Crude, but effective.
God. No, I think my first ever experience with image manipulation was trying to take sprites of video game ladies and make them naked. I think you win that contest, Rick.
I don't know. Did you succeed?
I guess. Does anybody really win when that's what you attempt to do? Let's be honest.
Well, we'll ask the millions of porn sites out there.
Strip poker. Remember strip poker back in the day?
Oh, man.
Good lord. It was literally like cartoon digitized graphics of naked chicks.
I do remember.
Those, I don't know why you're saying back in the day. Do you ever go to like shitty bars and
still
see
there.
The Mega Touches?
Yes.
Like you put in $1 and you play like the racy Mega Touch games, and it's just the EGA graphics.
Yes.
Like, oh god, I hope I draw the 10 of Hearts next. I gotta match this card and see the nipple. And sometimes it's not even a nipple. You get down there and you realize that they're wearing a strapless swimsuit.
Yep.
Like this is bullshit.
Got ripped off.
It's amazing to think about how, like, the tools that are available today to do indie games. Crazy, man. Absolutely crazy.
Well, back in the day, I mean, outside of things like Click and Play, you had to be a programmer to do it.
Yeah.
You didn't have, you know, a set of rules, a set of graphics, a set of sounds that you could drag and drop. And, you know, so back then, I mean, these guys were, I think they were real programmers, and you know the idea was that they were making real games. They just happened to be small, or you know whatever. They didn't have the funding of the major game developers, that sort of thing. And I know a few. Well, I know a couple of guys who did that sort of thing. Really, as you know, here's my resume. You know,
yeah.
To get into something bigger.
I think in most cases, the people that make games are still definitely programmers. It's just that the entry bar has been lowered enough where if you want to learn to program, if you want to learn to get into game development, there's just this wealth of knowledge on the internet that says, well, yo, dog, this is what programming is.
Right.
Yeah, it's not some like mystical club that you got to go to 19 years of school to figure out, or accidentally be in the right person's garage when they're inventing a computer.
Wearing a turtleneck.
Exactly.
You know, I think largely it's the amount of tools that are available to you now allow, at least what I think, for what indie gaming is, to really shine, which I don't know what you all think the main draw of indie game development is, but to me, it's the reason that I like playing these games is that it allows somebody with a vision that's outside the norm or outside of what would be considered commercially viable by a large corporation.
Yeah.
It allows them to go in and say, you know what? I'm going to take this crazy-ass idea of a guy who drinks time potion, goes back in time whenever he wants, and jumps on things and solves puzzles. It allows him to make that game.
No, I'm definitely with you on that. My interest in them is is 100% on the line of the games offer something different than the mainstream. And if anybody outside of the four of you, three of you, knows me at all, you know that I do not follow the mainstream one bit. And it's not intentional. I just don't think that way.
That is so, such a mainstream opinion of you.
I know. But it's the subject matter is so different or twisted or darker or funnier in a way that's not acceptably funny to the mainstream. Or,
sure.
And I mean commercial mainstream. You know what I mean? It seems like these games, they don't give a shit. Like, if we sell to five people that absolutely love it, hey, it was worth our time. And that added to the fact that most of these games do have an art style that's different, a sound palette, a graphics palette. I mean, it just the whole bundle most of the time is just enough different from everything else out there to make me take notice of it. And that's what I like about it. It's somebody doing what they want to do, and if somebody else likes it, cool, and if nobody else likes it, I don't care, whatever.
Like, just imagine a large studio, somebody approaching them with the idea of Minecraft. Think of how fucking ridiculous that would be. Like, no, it's these shitty graphics. People are going to make pixel penises with it, and it's going to sell 2 million copies on the Xbox, like 40 million copies on PC, and it's going to turn, you know, everybody involved with it into ridiculously wealthy people.
Exactly, and on the other side of that, look at something like Limbo. That game is, like, artistically, in every sense of the word, the gameplay is so different than anything else I've done. The graphic style, it's so dark and so just weird, man, that I don't...
Well, that game is dark as fuck.
Yeah, and it's not, it doesn't go out of its way to be. It's just, you know that the guys who worked on that, that was just their vision. They didn't try to do this. That's just them. And it comes out so smoothly and so solid of a creepy, weird, mindfuck of a game that is, it's not offensive, it's not, it's just so weird. If nobody's ever, if you guys haven't seen or played this game, it is the game of cool indie games as far as I'm concerned. It was the first game I bought on Xbox Arcade. It was the first game I solved on Xbox, played from beginning to end, and there's no instructions. There's no anything. You're just like this lost kid in this creepy-ass world. Everything's just like black and white. That's it. And you run around, and it's kind of a platformer, kind of a puzzle game. But it's just spooky and weird and absolutely 100%. If there wasn't an indie market, you never would have seen this. This game never would have come to life on the mainstream commercial shelves or whatever. I mean, there's just no way it would have happened.
I think it may have been originally launched on the Microsoft Summer of Games from a couple of years ago. Don't quote me on that, but I believe Microsoft saw that and they threw a lot of effort behind promoting it.
Yeah, it was bad, and I was actually, you know what, that game, Splosion Man and Trials HD or Trails HD, I mean,
they're all in one pack.
Yeah, you could actually buy that on a disc in the store. Which, that's really the only games I've ever seen on Microsoft or Xbox Arcade that are like that.
I think there may be a few others. I normally buy that collection like that for my brother for Christmas. I got him that Trials, Limbo, and Explosion Man combo last year.
I bought it, play all three of them, love all three of them. They're awesome games.
How many controllers did you break with Trials?
None.
That game is I can't play that game. That is too. It's like Excitebike if Excitebike hated me and wanted to frustrate me.
That game is awesome.
Oh, it's a great game. The second one just came out, which is apparently even worse, like even more finicky and difficult.
Excitebike. Good for them.
Yeah, Excitebike Trials HD Evolution.
It is Trials, right? It's not Trails.
Yes, it is Trials.
I always get it mixed up.
Trials is actually a legitimate sport where people get on bikes and do toned down versions of what you do in that game. Right. Like they fucking hop up stairs and ride down tiny pipes and shit like that.
And they do this, you're doing this on a motorcycle in this like insane 3D environment that is bigger than you're like. How do you describe it, Grant? How do you describe
the experience? It is larger than life. Like it's there's explosions and shit. I may be mixing Trials with Trials 2, but there's like weird explosions going off around you, and you're doing all these crazy stunts. Like it feels almost real. Like it's you're not doing anything too crazy, but it's still to the point where it feels realistically superhuman.
There's crazy stuff like you're on a level in the game and you're balancing on these things, and then you go down, let's just call it a ramp. You go down a ramp, but all of a sudden your camera pans out on the screen and you're going down like hundreds and hundreds of feet into like this giant loop that turns out to be the camera pans back even more and you're deeper in this environment. It's crazy. You got to see it. It's a really cool motorcycle jumpy game.
I'll say this about the second one. The second one has a level called, I believe it's called In Limbo, that's all black and white and moody.
Very
yeah,
serious.
they there's a Limbo level of Trials HD
Evolution
2 or whatever.
Nice.
There's also a level editor, and I believe what people are doing on the level editor is batshit crazy awesome. So, like I said, I learned my lesson after the first one, where I'm not going to play the second one. Get too aggro.
I don't try to beat it. I just have fun because the physics in it are awesome. Growing up riding motorcycles, it's very realistic and very, like, you feel it. It feels right.
It doesn't feel too arcadey, but it's so over the top and ridiculous. Like,
right,
they strike
exactly.
That balance perfectly.
Exactly.
All right, so Tom and Keith, do y'all have any, I have a feeling we're going to want to wind down here in a little bit. Do y'all have any last second shout-outs for good indie games to recommend?
I have a few. I'll rattle through them quickly. Building up to this, I did my homework and I picked out a few indie games. First of all, on the Xbox 360, in the Xbox 360 indie marketplace or in the marketplace indie section, whatever you want to call it, I played four games. One, I just chose the there's so many games in there. I just basically went with things starting with the letter T because my name's Tom. I picked a game called the first one I picked was called Tiny Tim's Tank Adventure. I mean, with a name like that, how can you not jump in and take a look? Basically, it's a game like a 2D game where you control like a tank and you are trying to rescue a guy named Tall Tim who's been shot down in I guess World War II.
So you're Tiny Tim and you're in a tank saving Tall Tim.
You're Tiny Tim and you're trying to save Tall Tom, which I like more. Once I discovered that, I was like, oh, this was a great pick. The whole thing has like this kind of almost Wallace and Gromit feel to it, like from the music to the way it looks. It's these pre-rendered like assets. I don't know how to describe it. Like if you flattened out sort of 3D clay, you'd have something akin to what these things look like. If you were to see the game, you'd understand, I guess. But it's sort of like this goofy, you know, the type of game where you progress with this tank and you got to be careful not to tip over, and you're trying to not run over landmines. You're trying to shoot soldiers and enemy, vehicles and stuff, presumably. I don't remember if I encountered any vehicles during the demo, but you can control back. You could switch back and forth between your machine gun and your tank cannon. And the cannon, of course, it just fires a ball that like bounces around the screen. So you've got to be careful when placing your shots. I would say that was a really cool find. It has like a kind of a quirky soundtrack that goes with it. Really kind of a cool game.
Cool.
The makers are Lighthouse Games Studio, and they seem kind of pro, actually. They seem like they have their act together.
Cool.
Another act together group is a studio, I guess, a game development team called Team Stendek. And they made a game called Tunnel Vision, also an Xbox 360 game. It purports to sort of meld sensibilities from 2D shooters into a 3D setting. And as the name implies, you're kind of going through you get a view from behind your ship, and you're going through these tunnels, you know, shooting enemies in your spacecraft. And kind of I see where they were going with that boast in the description. The enemies fire these like intricate patterns of shots that you have to sort of avoid, and you're dodging obstacles, you know, just like you would in a 2D space shooter. And if like 10 enemies appear and you shoot them all at once, you get a power up. Just, you know, so they really they took a lot of the things you expect in a 2D space shooter and put them in a 3D setting. The game has really awesome, like a cool, like electro, I'm going to use that term loosely, soundtrack. And the graphics are super sharp, like high res. It looks really nice. The colors are a little sparse, but I think that goes with, you know, flying through a metallic tunnel, you know.
So once more for the listeners, what was the name of that game?
The game was called Tunnel Vision. I think they could have come up with a cooler name. One other quirky little thing: the boss that you fight in the demo is called a Level Lord, which I thought was kind of cool.
I like that.
Yeah,
wasn't Level Lord the name of the guy who designed all those really like weird Quake levels back in the day? He was a Quake level designer, right?
Possibly, yeah. I wasn't a big Quake guy, but I wouldn't. It sounds like it. I mean,
call yourself that?
Well, I came up with some alternative names for when we make our own games. Instead of Level Lord, we could have something called like a Stage King, or like a Board Emperor, you know, ruling over the board. Or my favorite, which is a Chapter Master. As you get to the end of a chapter, you battle a Chapter Master.
Oh.
So I wanted to put that out there. Two more. Let me get through these quickly, and then I will pass the baton. Team Shuriken brings us a very interesting take on the fighting genre called Tokyo 2029 AD.
That's did go with the T thing. Wow.
Tokyo 2029 AD. Yeah, pronounce that 5 times fast. This game, I started laughing as soon as I started playing it. It's got this like Metalocalypse, if you're familiar with that cartoon, kind of like brutal feel to it. And you control, it's like a 4-player fighting game where you fight. Basically, there's not like a health bar. There's a health bar, but what it comes down to is whoever gets the most hits without being hit builds up their like rage bar. And then you can do a fatal attack, which like it slows down and you basically just hit your enemy with like this projectile attack, I guess it is. And once you do that, he dies, and the remaining guys all like in unison, like fist pump, like, yeah, next stage. Like, excellent. And there's like this like rocking like metal soundtrack in the background. And the thing that you guys have to play this game with me, because it's like it's one of those things where like it's stiff jointed, like characters with like too much articulation, so it's like it's like marionettes controlling the guys, and like when you jump, the guy just kind of like flops in his arm. It's so great. I assume everything they did was on purpose. So
once again, for the listeners at home, what was that one called again?
That game is
Tokyo
called
Tiny Tom 2020.
Tokyo 2029 AD. It only costs like $1, as they advertise. Like it's only
$1. You purchased Tokyo Terror Town 2020. You
bought Hell no! I played the demo. I'm not.
That's not a very sound recommendation.
I'm not recommending. I'm reporting. I mean, there's a difference.
And is this a computer game platform?
This is all Xbox 360 indie games.
Okay.
I played one game on the PSN minis, and I won't mention it unless we get to the end and you guys are wanting to know more about what I played.
More T games?
What's that?
More T games?
No, they're much sparser population on the PlayStation Network of these type of games. So I had to branch out in terms of alphabet, but may not even go there. Let me finish up the quartet of Xbox indie games by mentioning a game called Trinity Wars Prologue. So it's a prologue. Spine of the World, which is, if you can't guess, is a realmy medieval sort of game by a company called TNT Gaming.
Wow.
Go figure.
Well, Trinity Wars Prologue. Yeah, it was awesome. Look, you can go ahead and Google TNT Gaming. Unfortunately, their website's down, and a few minutes spent with this game might give you a clue as to why. Listen, I want to love these people because they, first of all, this game has an awesome soundtrack. It's got a great like medieval game soundtrack. It's almost like I can see like, check out this soundtrack. Let's build a game around it. It's got a great soundtrack. They actually use voice acting, which is not bad. They have a, I don't know how they. Again, this is my untrained eye seeing what look like pre-rendered like assets for the character and the different foes you face. The game looks, if you've ever seen the Legend of Zelda games for the CDI, the old CDI based system, the game is so much like that that I almost have to wonder if that's what they were going for.
My boy.
Yeah, it's. Basically, it looks like you pick goals from like, you know, place to place on a map, and then you go into this like 2D side scrolling fighting thing, and the whole thing for whatever reason is in like low res, so it looks a little weird. But you you battle and you have about 3 frames of animation, like your walking doesn't match your speed, and like you like kind of do a herky jerk swing of your sword, and the enemies do the same thing, and I'm thinking to myself like, this seemed to start off with amazing intentions, and then like maybe at the end they were like, let's wrap up the Trinity War prologue and get onto Trinity War, which is our real project, and just kick this thing out the door. So treat yourself.
Like, let's learn how to make a game. Now we know how to make a game. Let's go make it.
That's kind of what I gathered. There were a lot of lessons learned, and then they wanted to move on to their main project, which was they were actually making a proper like 3D exploration. And I found this all by Googling a game called Trinity Wars. And it was actually going to be like a turn-based RPG where you could explore like a 3D world. And like they were on their way to developing that. You can find like videos or at least a video of what they were working on. And I think these guys bit off a lot and found it quite difficult to chew. Because this is the type of game like Elf Glen Adventure that I wanted to make when I was a kid, I hope that somehow they get to their goal, because it just looks like they put a ton of work into this.
You're hoping they don't go out Keith or Kurt Schilling style there.
Correct. I don't know what that means. Oh yeah. Oh my God. The poor guy. Yeah. Kurt Schilling with the people that made Kingdom of Amun.
I loved Reckoning of Marmaduke the Barkening. I thought that game was great. I did.
There was a game called that.
Yeah, that's the name of the game. Reckoning of Marmaduke Barkle Arkling. I don't know. Fun game.
So Keith. that concludes my... I was just going to say, that concludes my quartet on the Xbox 360 indie games market.
All the T games? All right, well, Keith, what do you have for us here?
Well, I decided that I was going to find games for my tablet.
Ooh, cool.
Oh, nice.
Because, you know what... I'm not into indie games or those little games, but I just won't play them on my computer. My computer is made for man games. So I figured, let me find some cool games on my tablet. So I went out. I went out and I found 10 games that I downloaded. Seven of them suck or are not my thing, I guess I should say. Not really suck. The first game I want to mention is a game called Hextasy. It's your standard puzzle game made by a guy named Magnus Lorentzen.
Oh, that and already is a winner.
Yeah.
Absolutely. With a name like that, you can't make anything bad. And the music is really good in it, too. Basically, you've got this, it's a Tetris-like board filled with hexagons. and you just drag your finger across the tablet to join the like-colored hexagons, they'll disappear. And once you've gotten rid of all of the like hexagons in groups of three or more, then new ones drop down.
I've played that. This game's cool.
The best part about this game is it has a colorblind mode for us colorblind people who can't see all these purples and mauves and violets you guys put in your stupid games. So I was able to play this game easily. Cool. And yeah, so I've been playing it throughout the entire show today. So that's how much I like it.
Nice.
Another game I like is a game that's similar to many games out there, and it's called Chalkball.
Chalkball?
Basically, your board is a chalkboard. And you start off, there's this ball that's kind of floating around on the chalkboard, and you have to draw lines so that it can bounce back up and not fall down and die. Yes, it's a very common theme in games, but dang it, I played the heck out of it. I liked it a lot. I found that very interesting.
Yeah.
And lastly, my favoritest game of all the games that I got is called Pax Britannica.
Huh.
Pax Britannica is what they call a one-touch game. So basically there's no, you know, up, down, left, right, A, B, A, B, B, A, C, whatever. You basically touch your tablet and execute what you need to do. So it starts off, you can have actual players where you can play against the computer. I'm obviously playing against the computer. You pick a ship and then you set up a ship for the computer. And what you have is these two motherships that are slowly moving in a circle opposite each other, right? Within these ships, there is a circle that is divided into quadrants. So you have a four-section circle. And as your ship is moving through space, it's gathering resources. And these areas on that circle darken as they, you know, as more resources are gathered. What you do is you touch your tablet and you hold it. Now you can hold it and let it go in the first quadrant. What happens is like a counter or like a minute hand, if you will, goes around this circle in these very pointing to these various sections. The longer you hold it, the farther in the circle it gets. Each section is when you release your tablet, releases a different type of ship. So the first section is a small fighter. The next section is a larger fighter. The third section is a much larger fighter. And the last section is actually power-ups for your own mothership. And basically, you just sit there, and your ship goes in a circle, and the enemy ship goes in a circle, and you just keep tapping the screen, releasing these different types of ships to counter what the CPU is creating. And I played it forever. I must have played 15 games before I won one. And when I won one, I had no idea how I did it, so I played like another 15 games before I won another one. But the music is really like, it's like, you know, new age music. The game is dead simple, but it's got a lot of complexities to it. And I played that thing all last night till about 4 a.m.
And the name again?
Pax, P-A-X, Britannica. And it's made by several, I would guess, Swedish, Finnish, something, Hank Boom, Renard Bedard, and Matthew Gallant.
I think those are French people.
Okay, maybe. But cool. they made a really cool game. If you've got tablets out there, I recommend those three. Pax Britannica is my favorite of them.
Sounds awesome.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. Nice to see some tablet love on the podcast.
Absolutely.
We're good enough for that. Well, I'm gonna throw an out shot then to my two favorite indie developed game projects of all time then. Number one, just for the sheer amount of madness that seems to be driving this project, Dwarf Fortress.
Ah.
That sounds like a game Tom made.
Teacher wouldn't let me.
Dwarf Fortress is just about the greatest game ever made.
Platform,
it's PC. Purely PC. It's all text graphics. It has the worst interface of any game you'll ever play. It has just about the steepest and most difficult learning curve of any game you'll ever play. It is absolutely insanely fun and addictive. I love it. It's difficult to describe why I love this game, but it's the way that all your people interact and the sheer amount of depth to it. You just have like eight dwarves. No, you have seven dwarves, duh. You have seven dwarves and you have to order them to dig, construct fortresses and things like that. From there on, you start to get up to like 200 dwarves, and you have to meet all their needs, keep them happy, build just insane defenses against attacking monsters, things like that. I'm not really doing it justice because it goes to a level that makes of like depth that makes SimCity, you know, look like a tablet game.
Wow.
It's absolutely crazy. The other one, the one I've been playing the most recently is a game called NetHack, mm-hmm. which is it's a roguelike. It's basically of the genre that spawned Diablo, except for this is purely turn-based and permadeath all the time.
Wow.
So if you die, your character's deleted. I've had probably about 40 or 50 characters die, some of them in very heartbreaking ways. Death comes very swiftly. And for just myriad reasons.
But the battles are turn-based, Grant?
Yeah, everything's turn-based. Oh, but it's things like you're standing on ice and a dragon breathes fire at you, and you fall into ice and it refreezes and you drown. It's things like you're carrying a cockatrice as a weapon, and then you fall downstairs and you die.
So you kind of got to go through it once before you know what you need to do, kind of thing?
You have to go through it about 30, 40 times until you realize all the dumb ways that you can die. You drink the wrong potion on the wrong floor and you die. You can pray to your deity to like get health bonuses, but if you're in hell and you pray to your deity, you end up praying to the dark chaos gods. Your god's offended at you. The chaos gods punish you, and you're absolutely screwed. It's once again an insane amount of depth. I love the fact that developers are out there making that kind of very niche game, which is once again the real reason that I love indie games. So Rick, did you have any good picks here?
Yeah, I got a couple that I'll jump through real quick. The first one is actually a game that I spoke about before in another episode. It's called Robot Riot, and it's on the Xbox Arcade indie section. And this game, I was really surprised that I liked it. Obviously, I picked it a long time ago, scrolling through some games, simply because it was called Robot Riot. The graphics on it are very much like an NES platformer. Think like a Contra style like graphics, and the music is absolutely sick. Basically, you take on the role of Slug, a freelance intergalactic repossessions agent, as you track down, board, and shut down rogue spaceships, regardless of protest. Features 12 levels of action-packed fun across 3 unique ships, unique environment hazards ranging from blasting flamethrowers and bubbling plasma to disintegrating pulse barriers with rocking pixel art and amazing chip tune soundtrack. And
I didn't know we were coming armed with press releases to this.
The soundtrack for this game, awesome. Abso-freaking-lutely awesome. The graphics in this game, complete 100% authentic throwback to like NES style days. This game is really badass. It's 80 points, which is only a dollar, and it's super fun. Even the free demo has a ton of levels. You can play it forever. It's super badass, and it was made by a developer named Centurion Games. I don't know if it's a multi-conglomerate bunch of guys or a single guy or whatever, but it's definitely worth way more than a dollar. And then my next pick is also another Xbox indie game, also a dollar. This was done as a single guy's adventure here. And this, you guys know my love for Atari 2600 and old school like arcade games. Well, this game, the write-up says, experience a classic 80s game that never existed but should have. Space Command explores what would happen if the enemy type from one classic game attacked the heroes from another classic game.
Nice.
So if you can picture this, a wonderful screen of enemies, a.k.a. the Space Invaders, with the bottom of the screen of Missile Command. This game blew me away. No pun intended. It's awesome. The gameplay is, you got Space Invaders up top and Atari-style missile command at the bottom, where you've got, the graphics are all pretty low res, but rather than having your three bases to shoot from, you just have one that you can shoot three bullets at a time from. This game, you play it just a single joystick and fire button. Super fun. The sounds are great. The graphics are beautiful 2600 style graphics. And 80 points, you can't go wrong. It was fun as shit. I bought it. I've been playing it nonstop since I purchased it. It's awesome. So if you love old school retros, that's a perfect one. The next one I have is also an ex. Oh, let me give you that guy's name, because that guy deserves the pluggage. His name is Jason Kitterling. And we'll throw all these on the show notes. Another one for Xbox Live I have, also 80 points. It's called The Angry Hand of God. And basically, use a lightning bolt of divine retribution to completely level cities, but be careful. You have a limited amount of charge and rage. Take advantage of conditions, panicking people, stampeding elephants, and more to destroy as much of each city as possible. So basically what this game is it's like hand-drawn cartoons, and it has these really shitty cityscapes that get built that look like from MS Paint or something. And different things will spawn up to make like a city street. There's clouds at the top of the game, and you have a hand that comes down, and it's like in a finger pointing motion or a finger pointing position, and it has a studded wristband around it, and that's the angry hand of God. And you shoot lightning bolts to blow up stuff, but like if you blow up a gas station. Is an extra big explosion, so it'll also take out stuff next to it. You can do stuff like car will be driving down the road and you lightning bolt that car. It spins out of control and you calculate it so it smashes into the gas station and blows up extra stuff. You can blow up just a bunch of different ways to get like chain reactions and blow up things in a bunch of different ways with a super simple one-button joystick moving this giant hand of God around in a fit of rage, blowing shit up. And it's fun as hell.
It sounds like black or white, black and white without the white.
Yeah, exactly. it's just one of those really like no brainer. You got nothing better to do for 10 minutes. Just sit down, blow a bunch of shit up, and it's fun and stupid.
Like Rampage.
Yeah, you know what? It actually did. It had a total Rampage type of feel. And that was done by a developer guy named Alex Kaiser. And then for my last and final, this was something I wanted to talk about in my roundup but didn't, because I was saving it for now. And I know I'm 2 years late in jumping on this bandwagon.
Ah, here it comes.
But I have to say, I have found the absolute best game for me this is the game I've waited for my entire life.
Tribes.
It's a little game. All right. This game.
just go ahead and say it. We all know what it is.
This game possesses everything I wanted The Sims to be and never was.
Jawa Adventure on the Glen.
It has everything that I loved about World of Warcraft and nothing that I hated about World of Warcraft. It's a little game that's blown up called Minecraft. And I am beyond hooked. I'm zombie hooked. Like, cannot get away from my computer. I'm dreaming of giant blocks and digging big holes. I can't work at work. I can't sleep in bed. I can't fucking do anything. To the point I can't do anything in the game because I'm like a little retarded child going, ooh, shiny, ooh, shiny, shiny.
Now I want to know, where was all this enthusiasm when I had, and if I sound annoyed, I was running a server, like a Minecraft server, 2 years ago.
I told you, I'm 2 years behind the dude, this game is awesome! It is so awesome! I love it. It's adult Legos. It's stupid do-nothing game of do-nothing games. There's no game, but I can't stop playing!
I know one of our listeners has their own server, and they would be happy to invite you onto it.
If you're going to tell me that it's Elizabeth, I am going to jump for joy.
Well, her significant other.
Nice! Really? Oh, I'm in. And the coolest thing about this game is the mods and stuff. So you can really twist it and turn it and make it into, like, a completely different game. And then also, like, being, you know, the artist side of me, I love, you know, I can go in, I can make new skins, I can do, like, what I want to do with it. So it just, this, I if you like doing nothing but doing something and having a blast at it, you have to get this game. It's two thumbs up in my ass because I can't, dude, it's awesome. It's absolutely fucking awesome. That's my number one recommendation for the coolest indie game I've ever seen.
Well, there we have it. Rick is officially a time traveler. He he just got back from the year 2010 with amazing recommendations about the future of gaming.
Glad to be back. Glad to be back.
All right, well, then on that note, I'd actually like to ask if anybody listening has any indie game recommendations, send them in to us. Seems like it'd be a fun thing for us to go over and maybe spread the word about.
Nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Also, if you're listening, one small request we'd like to do for you here is we'd like to ask you to open up the iTunes, find the Nerdstravaganza podcast, hit the subscribe button, maybe give it a little 5-star rating. We're just a little indie podcast. Well, we are just a little indie podcast.
We are.
And your ratings, of course, your feedback mean a lot to us. Obviously, we're not doing the show to talk to ourselves. I do that enough on my own time.
And if you don't like the iTunes, you can hop on over to www.nerdstravaganza.com, where you can subscribe to the show, listen to current and past episodes, and leave us some comments. Why don't you leave us some comments about what indie games we didn't talk about or some games that you guys think are pretty cool and we can talk about them on another show.
Also, more recommendations for Rick's time machine for the next time he pulls that thing up. I hear 2008 was a good year.
They're coming also, out with a new game, Warcraft.
We'd also like to hear your level of enthusiasm for Rick's time machine as a possible show segment going forward.
Theme music, too. I'd like some good theremin theme music for it. We'll see you next week on an astounding futuristic episode of
Ricky's Time Machine!
In this episode of Ricky's Time Machine, Ricky discovers the wonders of CD-ROM.
Tune in next week as Ricky jets back to the 1980s and discovers verbatim floppy disks, now come in 5.25 size.
Double-sided, double density, for her pleasure. Why is it called iTunes? Shouldn't it be called EarTunes?